Welcome to the Andy Staples Show Legal Analysis Edition. I know that's what you come to this podcast for, is hardcore legal analysis. Well, that is kind of what you're going to get a little bit of today, because the Supreme Court has handed down a ruling in Alston versus the NCAA. As Ari Wasserman and I are recording this on Monday morning, this ruling has been out for about a half hour, and it's something. It's pretty interesting. To put it in terms that we college football fans can understand, did you watch the LSU-Oklahoma semifinal in 2019? Did you watch that semifinal? That's what this was. The Supreme Court was LSU, and the NCAA was Oklahoma. So, except the NCAA didn't even get to put Spencer Rattler in for two plays at the end.
Yeah, well, I always knew that when I went to University of Arizona Journalism School that I'd be able to break down 50-page Supreme Court ruling documents and kind of analyze them. So, you know, that's exactly why I got into sports journalism. But this was kind of, you know, something when you read through it, and most people probably didn't. I wish I didn't, but there were certain portions of this where it kind of felt like the student athlete finally had a voice, like for the first time, where people were actually saying what student athletes have been feeling for a long time, which is basically what the NCAA football monster is, a billion-dollar industry that generates, you know, millions and billions of dollars, and everybody's getting a piece of the pie but them. And, you know, this is the first time in modern history, I guess, that we could say, and it's a pretty significant day, where the Supreme Court of the United States is saying that too. And now the NCAA has to, you know, come up with some different answers, because, you know, this is some, I think this might be the first domino that falls that kind of changes the paradigm of the entire sport.
Well, and here's the thing. You've got this name, image, and likeness stuff. The states that have passed laws that go into effect this year, those laws go into effect in 2 weeks. The rest of the NCAA has not passed a rule that you know, they haven't passed any rules that will cover the rest of the states. I think they were waiting for this ruling before they did, because in talking to conference commissioners and those sorts of people, they wanted to know what the ground rules were going to be. And here's the ground rules. I think, you know, Neil Gorsuch wrote the majority opinion, but Brett Kavanaugh wrote the consenting opinion. And I think the Kavanaugh consenting opinion is written in a little bit plainer English, a little easier to understand what's going on. And basically it says, you know, the court ruled in this case. And in this case, so if you didn't know, this case was about whether the NCAA can make rules to cap, quote, educational expenses. And you can read into that whatever you want. But basically, they're no longer allowed to make any rules that cap educational expenses. But here's where the schools and the NCAA really lost here. He says, though the court doesn't weigh in on the legality of the NCAA's other rules, you should worry about that. If they are challenged, you're probably going to lose. And the last line of Brett Kavanaugh's opinion is this: the NCAA is not above the law. And so basically, this is one of the more conservative justices. Remember, Kavanaugh's a Trump appointee, telling the NCAA, hey, you got to stop this. You are breaking the law. You are colluding to keep their, you know, the athletes' salaries down, and you can't do it anymore. And it's not going to go well for the NCAA if they keep, because this is a strong rebuke of the NCAA, just an absolute nuking of what colleges considered sacred. They call amateurism something that is historically sacred, even though it's really not. And the court just destroyed that today.
You want me to read the most moving portion of this for people? This is the one part of it that I was just like, damn. This is probably the graph that you got to too, in that where you were like, this is the Oklahoma LSU game. But Kavanaugh wrote, in my view, that argument, or the NCAA's argument, is circular and unpersuasive. The NCAA couches its arguments for not paying student athletes in innocuous labels, but the labels cannot disguise the reality. The NCAA's business model would be flatly illegal in almost any other industry in America. All of the restaurants in a region cannot come together to cut cooks' wages on the theory that customers prefer to eat food from low-paid cooks. Law firms cannot conspire to cabin lawyers' salaries in the name of providing legal services out of the love of the law. Hospitals cannot agree to cap nurses' income in order to create a purer form of helping the sick. News organizations cannot join forces to curtail the pay of reporters to preserve a tradition of public-minded journalism. Movie studios cannot collude.
Wait, so when we work for newspapers, are it's just because they were cheap, right?
Yeah, that's right. I think they were just cheap. Okay. I laughed when I read that part. I was like, wait a minute. And then the last line of that was, movie studios cannot collude to slash benefits of camera crews to kindle the spirit of amateurism in Hollywood. Which basically he's just using other people, other normal jobs to say, hey, nobody else is getting slashed because of the spirit of the tradition of amateurism, which has been, I think, the biggest racket in the history of the world, other than the Star Wars movie franchises. But I guess we can talk about that some other time.
That's another podcast for another day.
But like, yeah, it's just kind of like, you can call it what you want. You can say whatever you want to say. The tradition of the game, amateurism models, the sport that everybody loves, all the things that go into play with that. But when it comes to the actual letter of the law, you know, these kids are 18-year-old adults and older. And telling them that they can't go make money in the free enterprise is insane. And it feels like it's only a matter of time before, you know, this was going to happen. And it's kind of amazing that it's taken this long when you think about how crazy it is that you can limit an adult's ability to make money based on what they've achieved themselves. And the thing that people don't realize, too, is that even though these college football players are technically amateurs, Andy, I don't think people realize how much work, blood, sweat has to go into just achieving a scholarship or to get to this point in your career. So you're not just talking about a bunch of peewee football players. I mean, these people have put in more work to get to college football.
It's not a gift from the school. Like, there's something you have to give in exchange to receive the scholarship.
Absolutely. You have to do your part to make their $1 billion. But I think you can make a case that a college athlete who has been playing football since he was 9 years old and going to camps and the hundreds of thousands of dollars some parents are paying and personal coaches and trainers and all the things that they've worked as hard at the craft of football as most young professionals have worked at the craft that they went to college for and they're in their first jobs. And you're not saying, hey, there's a, you know, any 25-year-old in America can't be a millionaire. That's not the way the world works. So, you know, I think that this is a huge step. And the one thing that I think is always the curious thing when we talk about college football in general, not just Supreme Court cases, but it's when things like this happen, it's the immediacy of how we feel about it and we discuss it. But, you know, the unknown is how this is going to manifest in the long run and the other laws that are going to come into question. And this is just the educational purposes background. They haven't even talked about pure compensation to athletes who go to school at these places. So
this was a warning, basically saying you better change your rules or all of these will fall. Because they fail the test. And I mean, Brett Kavanaugh essentially swatted down every stupid argument you've ever seen on Twitter about why it's okay to not let the players make money. I mean, it's almost like he went on Twitter and looked at all the stupid arguments and said, okay, I'm going to nail this one. This is one of my other personal favorite quotes. Businesses like the NCAA cannot avoid the consequences of price-fixing labor by incorporating price-fixed labor into the definition of the product. Or, to put it in more doctrinal terms, I don't even know if I can say any of these words, a monopsony cannot launder its price-fixing of labor by calling it product definition. I mean, he's just throwing haymakers at the NCAA. And they're going to have to figure this out. You know, that they're going to have to decide what they want to do. And so here's what's going to happen. Let's take the folks through the next few months and years as they deal with what happened here. You're going to see some people say, well, that's the end of college athletics as we know it. It'll never be the same again. Yes, it will. You'll have some people say, well, we're just going to go to Division III. Remember when Jim Delaney was the Big Ten commissioner? He threatened that?
I do. Yeah,
they're not. Let's have a little conversation about human beings and what they do and incentives. Ari, this is a multi-billion-dollar business. College football on television makes millions and millions and millions of dollars. If you put Alabama versus Georgia on television right now, millions of people will watch. That game will be worth millions of dollars. Whatever the athletes are making does not change that. So the ADs who think this is the end, don't worry. Many people will happily do your jobs for half of what you make now. The coaches who think this is a problem, don't worry. Many people will happily do your jobs for half of what you make now.
You know, the thing that I find interesting is it's the psychology of people who are afraid of this. And it's just, I don't know if it's the same psychology of the people who are afraid of the expanded playoff, where it's just like, this is how it's always been, so we have to keep it this way. But like, what do you think is the main reason that those Twitter people exist, in the sense of preserve amateurism? That's what it is. Like, do they like the idea that this is like a Rudy film, and that everybody who plays college football bleeds the colors of the team that they graduated from, and that all that matters is the love of the program and doing it for the program and the university? Or like, what are they afraid is going to happen, that they're not going to get their sport anymore?
For the people within the system, Ari, they're protecting their money.
Yeah, like, no, I get that part. And
But I understand that. At least I understand that. That makes sense to me. For the other people, I hate to say it, I think it's probably they're just stupid. There's really no other way to say it. They're probably just dumb. They probably don't understand that things change, the world changes, the world moves on. And it's probably, I'm scared of everything that might be different than it was yesterday.
It's just
it's how morons view the world.
It's just kind of an interesting situation, because when you look at, like, if McDonald's Corporation decided that all of their athletes all of their employees are going to be paid $5 less than minimum wage because the sanctity of McDonald's was from changing fast food in the 1950s.
Quarter pounders.
Yeah, the sanctity of, like, being able to preserve the hamburger and the fast food industry, and wages were that in the 50s, so that's what they should be now. Like, there would be outrage. Like, and it's funny, the reason why I read the graph out of the decision the way that I did is because it just, like, for the first time, there's actual comparisons to, like, what's happening in the real world with other people. And I think,
everybody's been making that comparisons for years. This is a
not on this side, though.
This is the Supreme Court justice.
That's a little bit different. And it's just like insanity, because if it was your family member or it was you, everybody's trying to get paid, you know? Yeah. And most of the things that people do don't go into a system that produces as much money as college sports does, from a television standpoint, from a tickets, concessions, merchandise. I mean, the amount of money that is being generated here is so outrageous that it's almost insane to think that, like, somebody like Tim Tebow went through the entire process and didn't make a dime off of it.
We'll be right back after these words. I don't talk politics much on social media or here, but if you've talked to me, if you've read between the lines, you know I like capitalism. I'm a big fan. Go get money. But the difference is, I am ideologically consistent when it comes to liking capitalism. I believe college athletes should be able to enjoy capitalism just as much as college athletic directors should be able to enjoy capitalism. And you find in this argument, in this debate, that you get a lot of people who are staunch capitalists who are trying to defend something socialist, because they think that is, I don't know what it is, but it's not consistent with their beliefs. So the fact that you have a politically conservative justice come out swinging like this, that should tell you this is anti-capitalist. Let the people make the money. Let the market figure it out, and it will. And let the chips fall where they may.
Yeah, and everybody's for this until they go into a place or a room with their superior and they say, you can't get paid more. Then all of a sudden, I mean, everybody is always very quick to tell somebody else how they should spend their money, but nobody wants to mess with their own money, you know? And it's just like, it's so easy to be on Twitter and to tweet at reporters and say, hey, these kids are amateurs, they don't deserve to get paid. And just like, well, how would you like it if somebody started to talk about how you should get paid? You know, and it's just kind of like this like disconnect between, and like, I don't know what it is. Is it like fans of the sport?
Look I at always these guys wish like I could kids? Have had a scholarship. I'm paying student loans and they're not. That bothers me. Well, here's my thing. If you are paying student loans because you didn't get a scholarship, that's your fault. You should have studied harder. Not even an athletic scholarship. There's a lot more money available in academic scholarships. It's your fault. It's always you didn't funny get a scholarship. Too,
because I tell my dad, like, if I would have applied myself 60% harder in high school, I would have saved, you know, 30 grand. Because I got a 3.3 and I did absolutely nothing in high school. And if I would have tried harder, I would have been able to get an academic scholarship, and it would have, and the fact that I didn't get a scholarship is my fault. You know, and I'm not saying that everybody has the ability or the resources or the time. You know, everybody's circumstances are different, and it's not as easy as just saying, hey, go get a scholarship. But there is opportunity for everybody
but
to go out there.
Don't cry about it because you didn't get one and somebody else did. Somebody else worked their butt off and got one. Like, don't cry about that. And also, like,
it's just a viewpoint.
It's
a viewpoint of fans to the athletes. I don't know what it is, but it just kind of rubs me the wrong way of just like, you guys are there to entertain us, but you can't benefit from that entertainment. And it's just like, I don't know why that exists. And it's
we don't
say that about the NFL. We all watched the Atlanta Hawks game against the Sixers on Sunday night. Nobody said that about, you know, Trae Young. So like, why
we don't say
is
that
this
with Kardashians?
Different?
We don't say that with kids on the Disney Channel. We don't say that with anybody else.
And I just don't know why people think the sport is better because they're unpaid.
Again, they don't. They just think it needs to be the way it was because they don't want things to change because they are afraid of some unknown thing because it's the unknown, probably. But it won't dilute your enjoyment of the game if some dude is making money off his Twitch stream. It just won't. And
here's what I think it is. Can I give you my thought, and then you tell me if I'm nuts. And again, I'm 100% for this. I think that people who work as hard as these guys do deserve to have a piece of the pie or have their hands in the pot, whatever you want to say. But I think that there is a certain segment of fans who watch the way that professional athletes can act in certain situations, or the fact that certain professional athletes have leverage financially over the institutions or the organizations that they play for, whether that be holdouts, whether that be demanding trades, whether it be sitting out because they're millionaires already, or they have some sort of leverage. And I don't know that people who work common jobs who make, you know, 50 to 150,000 a year, which is a pales in comparison to what most professional athletes make, like that.
And wait, did you say 150,000 is a common job? That's not a common job. That's a pretty high paying job.
No. I meant like 50 to 150, I thought would cover just about everybody. So 30 to 150. But even if you make 150, it pales in comparison to what an athlete is making. I'm not saying that.
Right.
Trust me, 150 is a lot of money. I'm not saying it's not. I hope that that's not how it came across. I was just trying to cover the entire population as much as I could.
Right. I gotcha.
But then you're looking at an athlete who's making 7 to 20 million a year, and then they're upset and they sit out or they want to trade or whatever it is that happens. You watch ESPN. There's something going on with a professional athlete every day, and it all is financial. And I think that people who love college football have a different view of what they love about their alma mater and the sport than they do about how they love a professional team. And I think what they're afraid of is that once kids or young men, I should say, in college football start getting, and women, but football specifically, because, you know, this is what the podcast is about. The idea is they don't want people to have leverage against the institution because there's a viewpoint that they love their school and they love their alma mater and that this is a pure for the love of the game type of sport, and it's not a business, and it's a way of like putting your head in the clouds. And they are afraid that now these athletes who play for their school will have some sort of financial leverage against their program. And then that could change the way the sport is played. Maybe an unpaid or a previous unpaid amateur athlete who loses everything by sitting out will decide to sit out now. Or maybe that player will be upset that he got benched and he'll take all the money that he made off of Twitch and, you know, go to another place or whatever. All the things, the drama that comes from, and I think that people are deathly afraid of that. That's my theory. I don't know if I'm nuts, but that's kind of the way that I view it. They don't want it to feel like the NFL.
Yeah, you want to hear my counter theory to that, though? Which I hadn't really thought about until a few months ago. What's our favorite part of the NBA season and off season? What's our favorite part of the NBA
free agency?
What's our favorite part of the NFL year? Or one of our favorite parts. The games free agency. Themselves in the NFL.
I'll say free agency, but yeah.
And the draft. Player acquisition, player movement, all that stuff. You can say whatever you want. We've proven over and over, we love that stuff.
Yeah, transactions. Yep.
Yeah, we absolutely love that. And I'm not saying we as reporters. I'm saying the public loves
everybody.
Everybody loves it.
Our stories do better when we're writing about transactions than they do about when we're writing about the games.
Yeah, you, a person individually, may not love that. People love it. And I was kind of in the same boat a little bit, Ari, as the people you're talking about who didn't necessarily want college football to become all transactional, even though it really is. I mean, what stories of ours get read the most? This coach got fired. This coach got hired. These are the coaches that might get hired. There's no difference, really.
It's a problem. It's the promise of the future. People are obsessed with what's going to happen in the future, which is why it's so funny that this is something that's so pushed back on, because the future here is wide open.
Well, and that's the thing. I think people will wind up enjoying it, but it is scary at first, because this has been a system where, and a lot of it is college sports and college football in particular. There is already a built-in element of change and a built-in element of looking forward toward the future. So, you probably think, okay, you don't need that other stuff to enjoy those transactions, to enjoy following that stuff. And you may not. And you may not enjoy it. But I have a sneaking suspicion more people than we realize are going to get into, the transfer portal stuff. Now that guys can move around. It's free agency in college football. We keep looking at it as, oh no, it's free agency in college football. Instead, given our consumption patterns with the NBA and the NFL, it should probably be more like, it's free agency in college football. Yay.
Yeah. Here's the thing that I always think about, and this is partially because of my background covering Ohio State, but do you remember how people acted when Maurice Claret tried to sue the NCAA to go to the NFL draft early?
He tried to sue the NFL,
NFL or whoever he sued and then didn't play, or, it's been almost 20 years since that happened. But that was one of the biggest stories of individual player empowerment, or an attempt for individual player empowerment. And then at Ohio State again, you had players who were suspended. You had a coach who got fired for lying to the NCAA about, people selling their own personal possessions. And this
by the way,
something-
none of that stuff happens under this. The stupidity of the what happened to those Ohio State players doesn't happen. And if you want to go back and read the receipts, go read what I wrote the day it happened. I told those guys, go pro now, because it's stupid that you have to deal with this.
Yeah, no, and it makes sense. And it just been a lot of different individual player. Terrell Pryor was one of the best athletes I've ever seen play football. And there are mixed feelings about whether or not he should be welcomed back by some fans to Ohio State after what happened there. And it's for selling his personal possessions? And I think that there is this weird, and I use Ohio State as an example because I had a front row seat to the way people were reacting to these things. And I wonder if that right there is the entire crux of what we're talking about right now in 2021, of we don't want athletes to benefit. And if they do, we don't want them to have power until they go get paid, because it brings distractions to our favorite program. It brings distractions to our university. And maybe they wouldn't be distractions under the new rules, but the idea that these guys had some sort of power to go collect off of what's supposed to be the sanctity of love for the university. And it's just I think people view college football through the Rudy movie lens. And it's just that's not reality. It's not the reality in recruiting. It's not the reality for the coaches who get paid. It's not reality to the assistants and the recruiting staffers that are making hundreds of thousands.
It's not reality for the Rudys.
Listen, if you go watch Rudy, you'll watch a movie about a walk-on athlete who loved that university so much that he sacrificed his body just to be on the team. And it's like, I think most people view college athletes in that viewpoint. I think people think these guys love this university the way that I love it, and they love it so much that they don't even care, or they are okay foregoing a salary in order to love this university the way that I do. And you're like smiling at me and laughing, but you don't think that's real?
Oh, no, I think it's 100% true. I do.
Okay.
I think you're absolutely right about that. And
it's like, if somebody makes, if the star player on Florida or Alabama or Clemson or whatever makes, because these guys have a chance, the biggest stars, like the Trevor Lawrences of the world, have a real chance to make some life-changing amount of money. But for the most part, the majority of the sport still has to play. But I think they are terrified that they are an Alabama fan and their best player at Alabama is going to be worth over $1 million through endorsements and Twitch and all the things that he'll be able to do. And he might decide one day, I'm not going to risk injury anymore because I'm already financially set. I'm not going to play in the Iron Bowl, and I'm going to illustrate that I don't love my program the same way that the fans who tune in every Saturday do. And I think that's the entire like center of what people are afraid of.
I think so too. But here's the thing. Alabama football is worth a lot. The best player in Alabama football should be worth a ton. You know who he's not worth as much as? Nick Saban. So I wouldn't worry about that. Like, who's worth more? Nick Saban or the best player?
No, I know.
It's not
the
NBA.
Preaching to the choir here,
man. It is not the NBA where LeBron is more valuable than Frank Vogel. We'll be right back after this message from one of our lovely sponsors. Now, there may come a time when it is like that. If you have a coach, and I'm not talking about Alabama, but let's say you have a school where the coach is just kind of so-so, and he lucks into a great quarterback. That quarterback may actually be worth more than the coach. But guess what? He probably was already.
Do you think that we are going to see in 10 years a world where players hold out, a world where players demand to be transferred in the middle of the season, a world where they act differently because they've already made the money? Like, do you feel like that is what's in store for college football once you get money involved?
No, because money was always involved. And that's the part that everybody conveniently ignores.
Real above the table money for the athletes to actually, you know, not only make the money, but enjoy the money.
Will there be holdouts? Maybe.
Just all the sorts of professional athlete behavior.
Probably not, because the time window is so compressed. The kind of play, we're talking about college football. The kind of player who's good enough to hold out or even register as a holdout for that to matter is probably only going to play college football for 3 years anyway. So, no, I don't think so. And will guys sit out? Well, we've been talking about that since Jadeveon Clowney was going into his junior year. It's a possibility. I mean, we saw guys opt out last year and still get drafted, but I don't think so. The other part that we sort of forget, you know who didn't have to play a single down of college football last year? Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields. They got college football played. So the part that people seem to forget is, just because money's involved does not mean love of the game goes away. There are still people who love playing college football. There are NFL players making millions of dollars who, if you took that millions of dollars away, would still go play for free or even pay to be in a league because they love playing. Yeah. That will still exist whether money is part of it or not. Will it change the motivations and the incentives for some people? Yes, it will. Absolutely. Will it completely change the fabric of the sport? Nope, it will not. All you need to know is Trevor Lawrence and Justin Fields didn't have to play at all and would have been drafted in the same places they were. Instead, they didn't just say, hey, I want to play. They launched a movement to ensure playing happened for everybody.
During a pandemic.
Yes.
Yeah.
So before you decide that injecting some cash into this is going to turn all these people into raging profiteers don't care about anything, just look at what's actually happened. Because
and they still need the yes, platform of college football to get drafted, correct, and make the real money. Right.
Yes. Money's still the money's a motivator, but there are other motivations here. And those other motivations don't go away. And you're right. And this is the part that I keep talking about with, you know, Alabama and Ohio State and Clemson. And everybody's like, well, you know, they're just going to get all the best players. They already get all the best players. It cannot be more lopsided than it is now. Maybe with this, somebody else will be able to build a team that can compete with them.
Right. Did you see that viral video from that fake IKEA worker? Who?
No.
Okay, there was a viral video where he would say the most common things that customers would say when they come in the store and they're complaining about something. Well, can you go check in the back?
Meatballs are made of horse?
Yeah. Can you go check in the back? Can I use my coupon? And then after he would use what they would say, he would come back and go, but they already, and it was like funny because you could do one for college football. And most people listening to this probably saw that video because it went insanely viral. But I think Andy Staples should make a video, and I'm going to send it to him after the show, that reads out Twitter complaints about compensation and then hits a rebuttal right away. And then you'll see it when you're done. That would be really funny and might go viral.
It might, although I've been doing this for what, 12 years? How long have I been on Twitter? 12 years? So I've basically been doing that. And
yeah,
I don't, and also I hate to say it, I can't compete with Brett Kavanaugh because he said it a lot more eloquently than I ever did.
Yeah. I know. I guess we have to read this last line here. The bottom line is that the NCAA and its member colleges are suppressing the pay of the student athletes who collectively generate billions of dollars in revenues for colleges every year. Those enormous sums of money flow to seemingly everyone except the student athletes. College presidents, athletic directors, coaches, conference commissioners, and NCAA executives take in 6 to 7 figure salaries. Colleges build lavish new facilities, but the student athlete who generate the revenues, many of whom are African American and from lower income backgrounds, end up with little or nothing. Like, I don't even know. Like, after that, it's just like, what do you even say? It's just like, okay, yeah, you're right. Like, that's it. Embrace the future.
That's it. Embrace the future. The sport's not going away. My experience, people don't just walk away from things that make millions of dollars. So, like, Nick Saban's not going to quit over this. And if he does, somebody else will happily take the job for $4.5 million instead of $9 million. So, it's going to be fine. It may be different, but it'll be okay. And just like Ari said, embrace the future, because the future is coming.
Yeah, and it's coming in a big way. And if you think about just I had a player of a recruit that I wrote about last year send me a text with the or two texts in the last week, one of which was the expanded playoff, and then the other one was today the Supreme Court rules. And it's just like he was so happy because of the opportunities that it could mean for his son who just signed with a team in the 2021 class. And it's just like, those are the people that we have to think about, you know, like, and when you actually put it in perspective between the transfer rule, the NIL stuff, this Supreme Court thing, the expanded playoff, like we're just in the summer of 2021 is going to change the sport forever. And what it looks like in 2031 shouldn't be something that people are afraid of. They should be embracing the idea that this is evolving like everything that is worth anything ever should, you know? And I know that there are certain things that you wish never changed. Like, I wish McDonald's hamburgers were as good as they were in 1950. But that doesn't mean that
you weren't born yet. You don't know if they were good.
Let me put it
this way. How do you know?
Let me put it this way. I think we can both agree and know that the product of hamburgers in a fast food setting in the 50s and 60s were probably of higher quality than they are today. Like, I wasn't alive for a lot of things that happened before 1987, but that doesn't mean that I can't make a judgment about whether or not they were terrible or good.
But I think this is part of the problem, Ari. I think part of this is romanticizing an era that never actually happened or that you weren't even alive for. I think that's what where a lot of these people get tripped up, where they're so scared of what's going to happen because it's not going to be like it was when, you know, before they were born, when their parents told them stories about something that may not have happened that way. Like, it's just, don't worry about it. Worry about the future. Worry about the now. You're going to have to spend a little more at Five Guys to get a better burger. It's just how it goes. Mm-hmm. But the guy at Five Guys, well, Five Guys is competing on salary with Panera Bread and with Chipotle to see who they can get to try to get the best employees. I guess everybody has to follow those rules, even the NCAA. Crazy how that works.
Hate to see
it. Thanks for listening. We'll talk to you Wednesday.